You are now listening to the EU Startups Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the EU Startups Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Ditson Garcia, the news editor here at EU Startups. Today, I chatted with Yob. He's the CEO and co-founder of the San Francisco-based company, Remote. Now, even though it's based in San Francisco, Remote originally was founded by a Dutch founder, Yob, and as the name implies, hires all across the world. Its own product offering really is to help other companies in their talent acquisition process, whether it's the hiring, whether it's the stock options, how to set up remote work. It's really an interesting company in the way it addresses the future of work and how it integrates between an in-office setting and a remote setting. We were able to chat really about the entire spectrum of remote working as it sits now, his own experience, how he came to found the company, and even how he sees the impact of heavy regulatory hiring spaces such as the EU versus America. So I hope you're looking forward to that. It's coming right up. Hello, Yob, and welcome to the EU Startups Podcast. I hope I got that name sort of correct.
Pretty good.
Good, good. Well, thank you very much for coming on. I'm looking forward to our chat today. I mean, I always am looking forward to these chats because they're always just so interesting for me personally. But when it comes to kind of this remote work, globalization of employee attitude, that's not something that we've really covered yet. So I am looking to hear from you. And just with that in mind, why don't you give a little kind of a spiel about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I'm Yob. I am Dutch, which is why the strange name. I am the co-founder and CEO of Remote, already for 7.5 years now. And I live in the Netherlands where I have two small kids and a nice wife.
Very nice. Very nice. Well, I guess kind of where we should begin with this whole topic, and I think it's really where you can begin with any of these, is just kind of, I want to hear about what first led to the creation of Remote. You know, what was the kind of moment that you thought to yourself, there's a gap here, there's something that I can approach and I have the right skill set to approach it?
Yeah, I didn't know whether I had the right skill set, and I still don't know. But so before Remote, I was working at a company called GitLab, which is a company that builds software for developers. And that company was fully remote. So we were fully distributed. We hired people in over 60 different countries across the world. And really what at the time, you know, there were not a lot of companies that worked in that way. And so the expectation is that it was difficult for some reason. But in fact, what we found was that it was not at all difficult to work remote, distributed with people all over the world. Actually, the one thing that was difficult was actually hiring people legally and paying them. But all the other parts were very obvious. And so what I realized is that for the people that we hired, we gave them an opportunity that they previously didn't have access to. A lot of people that we hired, they had no great jobs in their direct environment. So they either have to move somewhere, even though they were, you know, skilled, talented people with valuable skills. But many people don't want to move, or they can't for a variety of reasons, right? And so we basically gave them opportunity they didn't have access to before. Now, given that it was still so hard to actually pay those people, the barrier for other companies to do the same was still relatively high, even if you get over the whole working from a distance kind of idea. And so I figured, well, somebody has to solve it. And together with Marcelo, my co-founder, we decided to try to solve it. And so far, so good.
Well, and I came across, in preparation for this episode, I came across a blog post of yours when you kind of were going to create Remote and you're moving out of your previous company. And you talked about your daughter's birth and how that kind of, that experience kind of highlighted to you the necessity and the kind of humanity behind having a flexible work environment. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so my daughter, as well as my son, they were both born prematurely. And when a child is born prematurely, they have to stay in the hospital for quite a while. My daughter was 3 weeks, my son 2 months in the hospital. And they're now happy, healthy kids.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, they're not. I mean, they still wake up in the middle of the night now. But you know, I never really understood why it was important to be in the office, right? Like, if you are doing a job that's purely on a computer, at least not 5 days a week. And so, enjoying some form of flexibility, I think, is something that employers can do quite easily. It's just a relatively straightforward decision to make. And so, yeah, that certainly was one of the driving factors. I think, having said that, I think the greater advantage, and we see this today as well, of like working the way we do, is not necessarily about working in an office or not. It's more about, you know, for companies being able to hire people all over the world, and for those people to have access to greater opportunities. That's really the greater one, right? Because I think even if you work from an office, you can give employees flexibility and great benefits, etc. But for most people, they don't have access to opportunities at all, right? And so, in some ways, those things go hand in hand, because better employers tend to get better benefits as well. And ultimately, I think, you know, looking back, it's not so much that with remote, we create a whole bunch of remote companies that the majority of our customers work from offices. Rather, it is we make it very easy to hire and pay people from all over the planet, independent of where those people are. And right, and I ultimately, I think that is there's also the better goods we can do in the world, where it's of course great that people like me can work remotely and enjoy the freedom that that comes with that. Actually, creating opportunities all over the world is the greater good.
When you talk about, you know, the greater good and the humanity and the kind of naturalness that is to kind of give these people space and a right to work in the way that they find the best. But, you know, I've also read about your background as a neuroscientist.
Yep.
And I have to think that's connected there somehow, because you have to have kind of an understanding there about the way people think and the way people kind of address their own lives that has had to play into the way remote has turned out and the kind of guiding philosophy there.
I mean, I would love to say that that's true, but it isn't. It's, you know, in neuroscience, I was worried about how the brain processes information. And, you know, by now, my time outside of science has far eclipsed my time inside of science. So I can say that that's the case. I did, you know, working in science, I loved it. I think the work itself is great. And it teaches you how to be extremely critical and analytical. It teaches you great statistics and, depending on the field, great math. And in my case, also a lot of programming. So those were great. And you have to have high agency, because as a scientist, you don't have a lot of support. So I think it's a good school to develop good habits that will help you, especially if you build your own company, not necessarily related to, you know, doing good in the world. Although I do think that many scientists, I would say the majority of people that I've worked with, the vast majority, they do hope to make a positive dent in the universe, right? Which, as a scientist, is something very real, because, you know, for money, you're not going to do it. So,
well, yeah, that's, yeah, let's hope so. Let's hope so. Well, that's, then was there a difference, or at least an impact, in making that change from science, academia, into startups? Because you were VP of product at GitLab, if I have my notes right. So, you know, what was that change like? Because I think there's got to be many listeners who are kind of maybe in the pipeline of university projects and some kind of university accelerator, and are curious as to what that jump is from academia and, you know, university controlled work to then going into the entrepreneurial world.
Yeah, I mean, it's night and day. And in my case, actually, I dropped out of my PhD, or actually, I was about to start it, and I never properly started it, formally started it.
What was your PhD going to be on?
On information processing in the brain, which is what I was already, I was just continuing in the same lab I was working with then, with the label PhD. And I got like a 200 euro salary increase in potential, if I were to go into PhD. It was still almost nothing. because I went from 700 to 900 euro a month. But so I actually started the startup, and it went nowhere, and then I had to find a job, and I ended up at GitLab. But the difference is really stark, right, between academia and if you're in academia, they call it industry, which is, I always find very funny. I'm going to work in industry. But yeah, it's it's very, very different. In academia, you struggle a lot with money for almost any kind of research that you're doing. And outside of academia, it's much more performance driven. There's, to some degree, there's less job security, but to some degree, you know, you can have greater ownership and impact and things. And then, you know, in both cases, it highly varies on where you are. Right? Companies are there's incredibly high variance in how they are ran and how they work and how they work on the inside. To some degree, that's true in academia, but academia is very structured in a particular way that you don't have outside of that. And so, I don't know. It is very, very different. If you are doubting between the two, I would say it's easy to leave academia, and it's easy to work to enter the workplace, like to enter corporations. It's extremely hard once you're out of academia, go back into it. And right. So, you know, if you're doubting, it's like it's a trapdoor decision in one direction, like out of academia into the rest of the world. That's you cannot go back. But once you are like working a job, it's very hard to go back into academia. It's not impossible, but it's extremely hard. So I would factor that into making decision going either direction.
Okay. Well, so we've covered your early life, your beginnings, and now let's move a little bit more into just kind of the work that remote does. And something that I read that was interesting, I don't remember where I read it, if it was one of your personal posts or through remote, but it talked about how the company saw that the moment that an employee was given the ability to remote work, they automatically moved closer to family. And I thought that was kind of an interesting tidbit there. And I was just kind of curious about what that tells you from where you're sitting about the traditional approach to working in an office, going to a metropolitan city where the work is and, you know, and that kind of hub of people.
Yeah. I mean, really, if I were to give you like my great conclusion, it's that great people are everywhere. And it's as simple as that, right? And you know, it's... You can make all sorts of statements about like particular anecdotes like this one, which I always thought was really, really interesting. But there's an equal amount or a large amount of people that do the other direction, right? They get a great job and they move to the place where they really want to be. But really, my conclusion from all these years, and I continue to see this every single day, is that great people are everywhere. They're all over, right? And so it's not so much about... how we should operate companies or how we should structure work. Because again, I think there's like great variance in how companies do this with great variance in success as well, right? I think the most successful companies in the world are mostly office-based companies. And then there's great outliers when it comes to remote work as well and everything in the middle. But I think if there's one thing that's true is that for almost any great company, they tend to source people from all over the world. They work with people all over the world. And that has never changed. Like that, and it continues to be true. And again, like there's reasons why people are in particular places for good and for bad. But if you want to hire the best people, you cannot just be focused on one spot in the world. You're going to find a lot of great people, but you're not going to find all the great people because they're all over. Yeah, you know, it seems very simple, but it's the one thing that I keep getting confirmed over and over and over and over again.
Though you must still run into the wall, and I say this out of personal experience, I've held a few jobs now, that I've had bosses who are very okay with remote work. I've had bosses who are not okay at all with remote work. And, you know, where do you, I mean, obviously you are in support of remote work. It's in your name. There's no point in asking that question. But I guess the more in-depth question is, how has your kind of attitude towards those perspectives changed over time? Do you see that as just a closed-minded, no, you don't understand that great people are everywhere and you need to open yourself up to them? Or do you see the logic behind these kind of hard stances of no, people need to be in the office to really take full advantage of the work that they're doing?
Yeah, so I am not at all dogmatic about this. I think that running a company is really difficult, and I think that companies should work the way they believe is best, right? And so I'm not at all dogmatic about it. At all. The one thing I am married to is the idea that you should hire people from all over the world and you should go international as quick as possible. But I don't have a particular belief that one way or another way of working is better. right? And if I had that, the evidence is massively stacked against the idea that, for example, remote work would be better or worse, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think it's good. I don't think you make a quantifiable case against either. And so, and I, you know, as I said, like the vast majority, 99% of our customers, they work in offices, and some of them work with everybody in office, even on remote locations. So they have presence in multiple countries, and that works. Some of them have a main, like a hub and spoke kind of thing, where they have one big one and they have satellite offices. And some companies, they have a main office where everybody is, and they have several remote workers that work remotely, and literally any other configuration we see come by. I think the one overarching idea is that effective companies, they think deeply about how they work, how they communicate, and what kind of culture they create. And I'm pretty strong in the belief that it's mostly unique per company, but it's also like what it is and like how it functions is a great predictor of how successful that company is. And the more intentional you are about it, the better it is. And so if I talk to new startups starting, right, and they ask me this question, like, oh, should I work remotely or should I work in office? I always tell them, and they're always surprised about this, I say, do whatever works for you. Probably when you're very young and you're all close together, it's much easier to work together from an office because you don't have the communication overhead. You don't have to think about like, how do you organize? As you scale up, eventually you become a company that is sort of remote by default, because if you have multiple offices in multiple countries, you are a remote company. It's just that a subsegment of the people come together in some way. And so successful companies, what they do is they think about how do we structure people, how do we structure information, and how do we collaborate? And that really drives whether they are successful or not. Not a dogmatic take on like, oh, you should work remotely or not. In our case, you know, we have an extremely distributed team with people all over. And of course, we have a big name that sort of implies that we are remote. And we made it work for us. But it took a lot of intentional effort. Similarly, I think if you are going to set up an office in one particular place, you have to be very intentional about how are you going to attract people to actually come and work for that. Because a lot of people self-select into not wanting that or wanting that. If you're intentional about these things, your company will succeed no matter what. I think it's the challenge is when you're not intentional, when you decide to hire people remotely, but you haven't thought about how to make them feel included in the team. Like that's not going to work. Similarly, if you're going to ask everybody to come to the office, but your office is in the middle of nowhere and there's no talent around, it's going to be really difficult.
Hmm. I have to imagine there's a geographical question in all of this too, because it must change depending on where the worker is based. Now, obviously, there's regulation. Obviously, you know, talk about Europe, there's fragmented regulation, and the U.S. is more open. But then culturally, there has to be a change. I mean, it's kind of, you know, an open secret the way some say the Europeans approach work life. And versus how the Americans approach work life. And that must be something, a conversation that enters when you're talking maybe to an American company that is looking to hire Europeans or vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, there's some truth to that, but there's also a part in there which I reject. I think it's mostly driven by company culture. The culture within a company defines how it functions, not the individuals and depending on where they are from. So to give a really specific example, right? So let's say that you're a company, you're a US-based company, you start hiring people in Europe. Inevitably, because of the company culture that you've built, the standards, the process, the way you communicate, the way you talk about yourself and just how you work, those people you're going to hire, one, during your interview, you're going to make sure that they align with your culture. And two, you set standards so that those people align with them as well. It's not that that cultural conflict comes from the fact that those people are Europeans or wherever else, right? And so usually when people ask me about, you know, our cultural differences within companies or within teams, I have never experienced that in a severe manner, in the sense that it was something that stopped us from collaborating or slowed us down for whatever reason. I think it's up to the company to sort of guide how do we want to work, how do we communicate, how do we collaborate, what are the standards that we have, and then it's sort of irrelevant. Now, of course, there are extreme examples in different parts of the world of how local companies work, and they might have certain cultural standards. Well, I have a funny example, but it is a good one. So in the Netherlands, I worked for a while at a company as a software engineer, right before I had joined GitLab. And then every day we had catered lunch at the office. But in the Netherlands, catered lunch is like two slices of bread with a slice of cheese in between. It's not very exciting. And in Portugal, we had something similar, but it was a whole three-course meal. It was like, and it was really, really nice. And like food was really, really important. Whereas in the Netherlands, lunch is not a really important meal. Obviously, things are different. And it's kind of easy to argue that, yes, it's better to have like a proper meal in the office than the bad Dutch culture around it. But as a company, you can decide to change those things. You can say, well, we have a standard, and our standard is to serve hot meals, right? And it goes for hot meals, but it also goes for working hours, availability outside of work, our intensity around how we do work. And so, again, like it all comes with like, how do you run your company? What is it that you want? What is it you expect? And setting those expectations really, really clearly to all. And yeah, there will always be people that are not aligned with it, but those will, you know, they'll select themselves out.
But there has to be, I mean, especially when we're talking about time zones, right? That has to be a big problem, right? Because it's one thing to say, here's a company in Portugal, it's looking to hire in the Netherlands, or, you know, there's maybe a couple hours difference, even if, right? But then what if it's a Norwegian company, and they're looking to hire in Latin America, right? It's that kind of organization feels like it must be a headache and a very big challenge for a company to say, while we're all asleep, you're awake and working, and vice versa.
Yeah, I think it's the largest challenge that you have, right? If you have a very distributed organization, it's like, how do you organize run time zones? So in my experience, it's very doable if you have like 4 hours of overlap. Basically, that gives everybody 4 hours, you know, interruption free and 4 hours of like sync time. Then it's not a problem. The problem really comes when you have 4 hours overlap with one time zone, 4 hours overlap with another one, which in turn has 4 hours on the other side with the other side of the world, right? So you have basically a triangle across the world. That's very hard to do. And eventually, every company is going to get there at scale. So the earlier you figure out, like, how do we make this work, the more effective you will be. And there's a few really simple strategies. One is to build time zone clusters, right? Or rather, the ideal way is to have like a smooth gradient, which is to say, let's say you start your company in the US, on the East Coast. East Coast is easiest that's our central time. So you have East Coast, US. Then hiring people on the West Coast is fine because there's 3 hours of difference. Hiring people on Western Europe is also fine because you have maximum 6 hours of difference, which is enough to have like 3-4 hours of overlap at least, especially if all the sides collaborate. Now, if you have that team, right, and you're going to hire somebody in Japan or in Australia, yeah, it's going to be real difficult because they're going to feel really isolated. And so the best way to do it is by expanding your team slightly over time zones over time as it grows without suddenly hiring somebody that is very disconnected from the rest. If you do that, you find that there's not so much of a problem because then you can create teams around time zones. So you make sure that everybody in the team is sharing at least those 4 hours of overlap at least. And setting expectation up front also helps a lot. You know, if you say we're a US-based company, we're going to hire in Western Europe. Well, but our expectation is that you're able to do meetings. For people in Western Europe, for many people like myself, that's okay. Like I work more at night. I take more free time in the morning, right? So I work out and such, and then maybe I work more at night. For other people, not so much. And then, you know, if you're upfront about these expectations, that's fine. And then lastly is creating a great culture of working asynchronously. This is going to help companies anyway, which means that you just take notes, you make them available to your colleagues. And with AI, this is endlessly more easy, right? Like, because you can just transcribe every single meeting, you can have a company documentation, a company brain. And so that has only become easier. In our time at GitLab, we had to like maniacally take notes of everything and then maniacally make sure it's stored somewhere. Nowadays, you can just throw it all in one big place and AI will run through it. Which is
right. Another challenge then, I mean, following on this of time zones, and this is more, I guess, a question for you than generally as the company, but, you know, as your profile, you're European, you're from the Netherlands, as you said, and from what I understand, remote's based in San Francisco. In the US, right? And we mentioned this a bit before, but this topic of kind of how regulated Europe versus the US is when it comes to hiring. I mean, recently here we had the big salary transparency law where now you have to show. So how do you feel about these things? Do you feel that it makes things more difficult for companies trying to expand, or it's better in the long run for, you know, a company engaging in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, first I should toot my own horn, right? Which is to say, you know, remote is built to solve this complexity. So we make it very easy to hire people across. I think from a high level, one thing I will say is that the laws, labor laws and regulation is designed generally to do something good, right? There's good intentions behind the design of those laws, and that those intentions can be all sorts of things. They tend to be hyper local things, right? They tend to be local things to protect a portion of the population against particular changes or give them some form of security, which is in the long term potentially better for people. Now, in practice, of course, it adds massive overhead to companies, and it tends to slow down things like all innovation and slow down growth of companies. And so, what do I think about it? You know, I think it's very difficult to answer. You know, for us, again, like if you are a company anywhere, we make it pretty easy to hire through us. I think for us, the burden that we find is not so much in dealing with it, because we've gotten really good at it, but it's about setting expectations that, you know, what you expect in one country does not apply to another country when it comes to hiring, paying, and firing people. It's just different country by country. That also has like a secondary impact, because people locally, they value different things. So for example, stock options get great treatment in the United States, and in certain European countries, there's actually great stock option treatment. But in many European countries, people have never gotten stock options, right? So especially if you hire somebody who's only been locally employed, they do not know about this. They do not know about the upside. So it's harder to hire them, because you want to convince them with something that they don't value. And secondarily, even if there's a big windfall, like if the company gets sold or something, they have to deal with the tax implications, which also has an effect on the company because they're hiring this person. And so it's complex. It's complex. I think the world would be better off if we were to simplify, but I also don't really see a clear path, because again, these laws are designed from the perspective of a local government that is protecting its own interests, right? And they don't have much incentive to streamline this across countries. I think the EU could do a lot well in this regard on paper. They haven't done anything. So I don't know. I don't know what to say about it.
Okay. I didn't want to put you on the spot there, but I think it's an important question, you know, to ask somebody who's there.
No, I love to talk about it, because I think it's super interesting, right? And I think it's important that we are not going to change things if we're just going to complain about it. And so for people from my position, for example, if I'm going to say, well, all these rules and laws are stupid, really what I'm saying is that these generally democratically elected officials have made decisions that do not make sense, which sort of, you know, spits in the face of the people that voted for those people. And like, it's needless ignorance of local politics that have driven particular decisions and laws. And so we need to be somewhat empathic towards it. But yeah, I think in a very globalized world where we're highly interconnected with other countries and, you know, companies are hiring all over the world, yeah, many of those laws don't make any sense.
Okay. Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I want to thank you, Job, very much for joining me on here. It's been very interesting, and we're definitely going to keep seeing more of remote. I definitely do. So I'm looking forward to it.
Thanks, David. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye.